Welcome to Paw Print Academy, your blueprint to raising better dogs. My name's Ryan, and I'll be your host for this journey. I've got my trusty co-host here, Brianna.
Hello.
And together, we're bringing you real-world training insights built on leadership, structure, and proven methods. We record this podcast with live clients on the line in one take with live, unscripted questions and answers. At the end of the day, this podcast is a lot more than just teaching your dog to sit or stay. It's about building trust, creating calmness, and becoming the kind of leader your dog truly needs. We do that with our three-pillar method of trust, obey, and perform. Together, we'll show you how these three pillars shape every step of training. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. All right, episode 11, building confidence in puppies, setting the stage for success. Today, we are finishing up our puppy,
series.
Right, series.
Yeah.
So this will be the last episode that is strictly about puppies, but just because it's about puppies doesn't mean that a lot of these techniques don't work on older dogs too. We just frame it in the concept of we started a lot of these podcasts with building from the ground up, and a lot of people reach out probably a little bit too soon to try to get their puppy trained because they got it like 3 days ago and they're like, it's destroying my house and peeing everywhere. And yeah. What do I do with this? So we are trying to to stop the madness, but set up a good foundation for your dog to grow older. But that doesn't mean that, one dog and like the way a puppy learns is so different than an older dog that it just can't even be, switched back and forth.
Right. Especially when it comes to like confidence building.
Right. Because this is kind of a universal concept. So, tonight we're going to be talking about confidence. Yep. And how to build it in your dogs. The way that this goes, we already talked about the live clients on the line, but sometimes they will type in a message or a question or something during the recording process, and so I'll read that aloud, and then we'll answer it, and then at the end we'll open it up for live Q&A, and then we'll give you guys two listener projects, which are just, hey, this week, I want you to work on this, whatever that is. I don't want to spoil it. So.
Right.
Okay. Like start at the end. All right. So the core idea for today is that confident puppies or dogs, just in general, they grow into stable, balanced adult dogs. Confidence does not happen by chance. A dog doesn't just grow up into confidence if we don't help nurture that. Yep. And in fact, it's built through structured exposure and through leadership and through fair challenges. Mm-hmm. Confidence is not something that is built without exposure to something that may be scary or difficult or hard to overcome. Obstacles is part of life. And by overcoming those obstacles, that's how your dog learns confidence.
Yep.
So a lot of people are like, well, my dog has never experienced anything scary. So why are they not confident? And I'm like, well, maybe that's why. Because right. They haven't really experienced anything scary and then overcame it.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So let's jump into it. So number one, exposure builds that resilience.
Yep.
And resilience is something in dogs that you can tell a resilient dog. I mean, dogs are resilient to a great degree, right? There's tons and tons and tons of stories. And pretty much everybody has run across a time where you experienced a rescue dog that came out of a very, very, you know, crazy place and a crazy life before. And they've overcame it, and you wouldn't necessarily even know looking at them.
Yeah, there's definitely a way to, like, even resilience, I think, when you think of it in a dog, really comes down to, like, trusting people and having that trust broken and then rebuilding trust with humans again.
Right. Yeah. So the right kind of exposure, though, is what helps puppies face the world calmly. Let me not jump ahead, as I always end up somehow answering the questions that I lay out before we actually get to the questions. So I'm going to try not to. We'll see how we do. Let's talk about this. So controlled introductions. We want to use controlled introductions to new sounds, surfaces, environments, heights, like all of these different things. There is a concept in the science that says that there are only two things that that puppies are born with fear to, right? And that is loud noises and falls from a height.
Yep.
However, some people would argue that their puppy is immediately, like, scared of other things. The science says that there is probably something that led them to becoming fearful of that, and that was a learned behavior rather than a born with behavior.
Yep.
So, as a dog trainer, right, what are, like, you want to talk through how that looks for us? Like, what are we controlling when we're in introducing these things?
What are we controlling, or what are we kind of introducing?
Well, so, like, how does that go, right? The controlled introductions. What does that look like?
Right. For other dogs, or, like, just anything in general?
Right. I guess, so let's start with just what's on here, right, of sounds, surfaces, and environments.
Right. So when it comes to sounds,
it's really all-encompassing.
Yeah. We're really big on, like, for sounds, we do, like, the Alexa exposure, right? You just play random sounds at a low volume. Kind of work your way through that. There's lots of videos that we use and things like that to play those sounds. But we'll start at low volumes, kind of work your way up, start at, like, meal times, things like that. That's a great way to do it, is when your dog is a puppy at breakfast, lunch, dinner, whatever meal times you guys have, play those noises on your TV, on your speakers, on your Alexas, on your Google Home, on your whatever all those other crazy devices are. Play them at low volumes throughout their meal time. And then as soon as they're done eating, stop the sounds. And then the next day, increase the volume by a couple notches. And just keep going up and keep adding noises. But all of those things are going to be really good. Surfaces, I mean, just walk your puppy across surfaces, right? That's how they test, like, working dogs. They just, like, run them across all these random surfaces and see how, like, unbothered the dog is. But just walk them across different surfaces. One big thing that we really, really notice in dogs that we get are hardwood floors. Because even if you have a hardwood floor, most of the time you have carpet over it. So we get a dog in that, like, cannot walk across the hardwood floor to save their lives. And they're like, I got to make it to that carpet over there.
Suddenly, they've been given a pair of skates.
Right, or, like, noodle legs or something. It's crazy. But different surfaces, those things matter. And then what was the other one?
Just environments, right?
So that's, like, just taking them to different places. Take them to parks. Take them to parking lots. Take them to hardware stores, but don't take them to the busiest places you can imagine, right?
Right. That, yes. Yes.
Be in, sorry, like, I have the to calm jump in here. So, environments.
Right. Because you have to dial this back to be like, imagine you were 8 weeks old, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have the experience that you have right now. So, like, a single car alarm going off or a siren or this or that could potentially set you off to where you're like, oh my gosh, what is that?
Yeah.
And then if that's coupled with the same timing as meeting another stranger or seeing something crazy go by or another dog barking mm-hmm. at them. And these are the situations that we see unfold in front of us out in public every day.
Yeah.
And those owners don't probably, this isn't me, you know, taking a dump on these owners. It's mm-hmm. just that they probably don't even know what's happening here. But right. like their puppy that is, you know, doing the like noodle legs, like plopping around all over the place, and they look so cute, but their tail is tucked between their legs mm-hmm. and they don't look crazy scared, but like their ears have not left their skull for yeah. the last like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Right. Like those are dogs that are developing in that moment. They're mm-hmm. developing these fears.
Yeah.
And you're influencing that. So we can't just take the puppy to Ulta right off the bat, mm-hmm. right? There's too much going on. We gotta start places, go to a public place, but go to a public place like right when it opens, when there's very few people there. Go to a park, but like over out on the side where there's no one walking around and they can see everything at a distance because it's safe.
Right. And those things are important, but also it's like the things that you need to get to before you even go to those places is more important. Like every day in your household things that dogs end up getting scared of, like pots and pans banging around and you opening up an umbrella because it's raining outside or the garage door going up and down. I could name like a million things. And I think people all the time are like, well, we need like a list. And there are like plenty of lists and we should probably like make one. But there are lists that like we even use with tons of different, you know, things that you should be exposing your dog to. Christmas trees, you know, inflatables in the yard and like yard decorations in general is a big one that we see dogs with all the time, especially this time of year.
Right.
We dogs have are that, all over and they're like, ah, what is that?
Right. We've got that like happy-go-lucky abominable snowman.
Right.
Inflatable yeah. at the end of the street that the dogs, all right. of the dogs hate.
But it's like things like that and even the more important things like play the noises of dogs barking but like do it low enough to where your dog's not reacting and you might think that's pointless or useless because they're not reacting but they hear it but if it's at a low enough volume they're not worried about it because they're like oh the dog's too far away whatever but it's still desensitizing them to some degree to the level of dogs barking to where it can build that confidence to be like yeah whatever there's a dog barking. Because exposure is what builds that confidence. And if you're not doing it daily and picking something to work on, then your dog is missing out on it.
Yeah, totally agree. So we want to pair exposure with also calm leadership. And calm leadership, we talk about the leadership a lot of times on this podcast, but the calm leadership just means I want you kind of in front of the dog, showing the dog, look, see how my body language is. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried. Now, you telling your dog, see, you don't have anything to be worried about is useless. Well, that is not a soothing thing to talk to the dog and tell the dog all of the words. Mm-hmm. Now, you can fall back on a few calm marker words that you've already taught the dog mean that either they're going to get a treat or they've done the right thing or they're in a good position, whatever. Those things are fine. But talking to your dog, hey, buddy, don't worry about that fire engine. That's okay. Don't mm-hmm. that it's I know right, it's going
you're
away.
It's they're you're okay for me.
Right. You're okay. Right. That's another one. You're okay. You're okay.
Yeah.
If you didn't teach your dog you're okay when you were inside the home and they weren't worried about anything, then it's for sure not doing you any good once you're out.
Right. You're definitely just confirming like their emotions and how they're feeling, which is stress and negativity and worry and all of those things. Yeah. And if you're like, yeah, you're okay, and you're like petting them, you're definitely just confirming their fear of whatever that is.
Yeah. Right. Because you're acting different.
Yeah.
And so the dog's going to look to you for like, okay, well, this is strange. This is suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that is suspicious to a dog, they're going to give it their attention.
Yep.
Things that are not suspicious to you are going to, in general, stop being suspicious to the dog.
Yeah.
Now, it's not automatic. It's not like, oh, well, you didn't pay attention to that dog, so the dog doesn't pay attention to that dog. Well, they might still be curious. But if you pay attention to it, they're for sure going to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then the last one with this one, right? So we actually want to avoid flooding a mm-hmm. puppy. There's a concept called flooding that gets a lot of mixed reviews in the dog training space. I believe that it can be a useful technique as a last resort, or certainly very far down on the, I guess, on the hierarchy. So flooding is when we put the dog in a position that they are uncomfortable, so that they experience this uncomfort, whatever it is, mm-hmm. the discomfort. But we make sure that they're safe. We make sure their needs are met. We make sure that they're understanding that we're there with them. But we still expose them to whatever it is that they're scared of. And we expose them and we expose them and we expose them and we expose them. Until such time as the brain's finally like, I'm kind of exhausted of being scared here. And then a different set of hormones start getting released and the dog starts to calm down and relax. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a few issues with that. And so that's why we really prioritize that last. There is one train of thought on this that's like, let's say that you're deathly afraid of spiders. And the concept of flooding is like putting you in a room full of spiders
mm-hmm.
and being like, you're okay. You're okay. You're okay.
Yeah.
Right. You can imagine that you're probably not going to believe that for a good while.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if all of those spiders don't hurt you and they don't get too close to you, there's probably a good likelihood that you will eventually calm down.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't pass out first.
Right. You might be that calm.
Right. Branna would probably not.
I would pass out first.
She would pass out first.
Yeah.
She doesn't like spiders. Mm-hmm. So the issue, though, is that you can push flooding too far too fast real quick. And because if one of those spiders initially were to jump on Brianna.
Right, or like crawl in your mouth.
Or crawl, or right. Right, because you didn't control the variables properly.
Yeah.
You can imagine that you're going to, you might escalate.
Right, this. Not going to go well.
It's probably not going to go the way that you want it to. Which is why even when we're flooding, even if we're using flooding, because that's our only option, and there are some dogs, I'm not going to argue about this, there are some dogs that flooding works really well.
Yeah.
There are some dogs that flooding doesn't work very well. And for that is where you need to really seek out a behaviorist or somebody who really knows what they're doing to decide and kind of read into which dog do I have here?
Yeah.
Because I'm not standing here and advocating you just go flood your dog with whatever they're not good at.
Yeah.
Because that can go very poorly, and it can increase your aggression, increase your reactivity, increase your fear, and all of those things.
Yeah, because I definitely think, like, in my experience, I think it's a little bit more useful, in my opinion, like in the cases I've seen or witnessed, for aggression rather than fear.
Yeah. Right. And it comes down to, there are some fears that, where I've seen it used really, really well, is fears that are coupled to a something that is also pleasurable. Right. So case in point, a dog with fear of like human contact, right? Or contact to the, like the lower legs or something like that. And a dog that's just, they have seized up so much that they just cannot think through anything, cannot, and you've exhausted all of these other options. And then there's this option of flooding where you can show the dog that, oh, he didn't hurt me. Oh, actually, that feels pretty good. Oh, wow, this is actually pretty nice. And that's how a lot of times you can positively influence that.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's right down the rabbit hole on flooding. So in puppies, though, puppies are too young to just flood them. There are so many other options. There are so many other highly science-backed options to do instead. We just don't recommend flooding for puppies.
Yeah.
All right. End each session with success. No matter what you do, always end with success. Don't end with like, oh man, they didn't listen. All right. Oh well, just go back in your crate.
Yep.
Right? Even if you got to take a break for a little bit and then come back to it and then nail that behavior, nail that whatever it was, right? And then, oh, great job. Even if it's a very low, easy, low-hanging fruit, something easily attainable. Always end with success.
Yep.
All right. What early exposures do you think make the biggest impact on confidence?
I'm probably going to go with like handling techniques. I think that's one people really, really miss out on and don't think of. And it has nothing to do with anybody else but you and your dog, really.
And so handling techniques. Yep.
So that involves touching paws, touching ears, lifting their lips, looking at their teeth, grabbing their tail, touching their, you know, underbellies, all of the things that like a vet or a groomer would do. But you should be doing that with your dog, because regardless of whether you're going to do the grooming or not, if you get your dog comfortable with situations of being handled to that degree, then they're going to be, one, a lot more confident in general, because you've just exposed them to a lot of just like touch therapy, essentially. And two, if they do go to a groomer or a vet, they're going to be a lot more comfortable with either you doing it with the vet, because there are some vets that are very open to working with you handling your dog in certain situations, or the vet themselves or the groomer themselves handling them. So yeah, definitely handling for me, for sure.
And second question, how do you recognize when a puppy's overwhelmed? What do you look for?
Pretty much not taking food in puppies, because puppies will kind of take food through any situation. So if they're not taking food, they're definitely going to be overwhelmed. Shaking, ears, tail, for sure. Tail is a big one in little puppies.
Yawning.
Yep. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Shaking, obviously, but shaking doesn't always give it to me for a dog to like end a session or show that it's like too much overwhelm,
right,
to be right. honest
it's
with you.
It's just stress.
Yeah. That one isn't always 100% for me, but definitely, yeah. Tail for sure. And not taking food.
All right. So let's go to the next one. Confidence starts when puppies know that someone is guiding them. So where we go with this is, when you are at the front of the friction of whatever it is that you're going through, and you're going through it with them, they're going to be significantly calmer because they're going to be watching you, because everything is new to them. They're like, I have no idea what the heck is going on. But they have you to look to. When you are a soup sandwich yourself, and you're just walking around aimlessly and you're in some puppy or, you know, dog friendly store. And it's like, I'm going over here, I'm going over there, I'm going over here, I'm going over there. The dog doesn't know what is going on. Mm-hmm. And something as simple as, oh, well, I'm just going back the same way to go look at this, you know, this other price on this other item. The dog doesn't know any of that. When you look like you're lost, they think they're lost. Mm-hmm. Just as an example, I know it's not all about being lost, but the concept is the same. What your body language says, the puppy is reading. Mm-hmm. Don't forget that.
Yep.
So when you act confidently, when you walk up to someone confidently, when you walk out confidently, all of those things are things a puppy is going to pick up on. And everything that you do, the dog wants to look to you for guidance.
Yeah.
Where dogs stop looking to you for guidance is when you don't lead. Mm-hmm. When you don't lead them and you let the dog make the choice. Like, hey, do you want this toy or do you want this toy? Mm-hmm. Do you want like this food or do you want this food? And you might just be wanting to learn about the puppy, so you're giving them all these choices. But you're giving them choices, then they're making them. And that's elevating their decision-making process to go, right, I have to choose.
Yeah.
And that can backfire because a lot of dogs, they were never genetically predisposed to making decisions. Mm-hmm. And we put them in that position, they were going to be great pack dogs. But we put them in the position to be the leader. And they weren't supposed to be the leader.
Yeah.
They didn't want to be the leader. And you force them into that position to be the leader because you don't. Mm-hmm. And then we get an anxious, nervous wreck of a dog. And we're like, oh, what happened? But you let them choose everything. You let them choose where to sleep. You let them choose where to sit. You let them choose where to go during the day. You let them choose what to eat. You let them choose when to get their toys out. You let them choose from 20 different toys in a toy box. You let them choose when to go out the doggy door. Right. You let them choose when to chase the squirrels. Those things are things that we look at as that's freedom and that's very valuable to me. Humans, and especially Americans, look at freedom as this very high worth thing. Dogs don't necessarily always look at freedom in the same way.
Yeah,
freedom is valuable. For sure, freedom is valuable. But a lot of dogs are totally fine just being led. They're like, oh, cool, we're not going outside yet. Oh, that's fine.
Right. Well, we're also like in this age of like gentle parenting, right? Where it's like our parents were like, sit down, shut up, because I said so. Right. And now it's like, hey, could you maybe please be a little quieter because I'm trying to do something important? It's like, no, no, just sit down, be quiet.
So, puppies. I'm not even going to go down that road. So puppies look for structure to feel safe. And when we provide that structure, mm-hmm. when we provide that baseline foundation, and that we communicate to the dog very clearly that they're either doing it or they're not doing it, puppies see that as very fair. And it pacifies their anxiety because they don't have to choose. So clear marker words and boundaries are the next thing that really comes into play to reduce that anxiety, because that's our communication. We say communication all the time here, but how do you communicate with your dog? If you use 40 plus words to try to communicate a concept to your dog, it's over. They're not listening. They don't understand. You've got like 3 words. You got to, it's yes, no, and free. Mm-hmm. Right? We can use those really, really successful. I need one that says, keep doing it. I need one that says, you're done. I need one that says, wrong one.
Yeah.
Choose a different one. Mm-hmm. By doing that, you could have a conversation with a human who did not speak any English, but you could get a point across with those three marker words, you could pointy talky your way through all sorts of things. You really could, right? It's like if they understood, like, yeah, keep going, that's the right thing. Yeah. Or, right, you got it, you're all done. Or no, mm-hmm. Wrong one, try again. All right, last one, calm, consistent handling builds trust. So the calmness is important. With puppies, they love to ramp things up. Mm-hmm. And when we ramp things up with them, we can actually become a little scary in the process because they just don't understand how we're communicating.
Yeah.
They don't know verbal cues yet. They don't know a lot of these things. And we get wilder and crazier. A big thing that comes up is when dogs pee and poop on the carpet or in the house. Mm-hmm. Number one thing we see is yelling.
Yeah.
It's like, no, what are you doing? Right. They might have got the no, right. And they certainly picked up on it with the tone of voice. But in all the other words that you just used, confusing and anxiety ridden.
Yeah.
All right. So how do we explain to owners that structure builds confidence without making them feel like that structure that we're talking just limits them? Right? Limits them, limits their dog. A lot of people feel like when we talk all of this stuff about structure, they're like, well, I just can't have any fun with my dog.
Right. Well, it comes down to when you have a structure and a schedule with your kids and your family, your kids still have freedom time throughout the day, you know, when there's downtime or play time. But you still have a schedule to abide by, right? So when playtime is over and you have to move on to dinner time, playtime is over and you have to move on to dinner time. I think that's what it comes down to is like, yeah, you can have freedom and fun, but it still has to have somewhat of a schedule in order for the dog to feel confident in what's going on.
Yeah. What would you say is like a simple routine that an owner could use to, I guess, reassure a nervous puppy without being like, you're okay, and like without the notorious ones?
Like a daily routine?
Well, I guess like in the moment, right? When a dog gets nervous, yeah, and you can tell that they're getting nervous, what would you recommend that they do instead of trying to like reassure the dog and be like, yeah, it's okay.
I mean, I really pretend like nothing's happening, right? It depends on what's going on, to be honest with you. Okay, that's fair. But
so let's say that you can tell the dog got really overstimulated, mm-hmm, right? I'd say number one, I want to increase the distance from whatever it is that's overstimulating, yeah, them, mm-hmm, right? Because distance is the number one thing that we can build in that immediately makes something less scary.
Yeah.
So distance is number one. And with distance, we also... man, I lost my train of thought.
Distance first.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Let's just go back to the question.
We can engage and play with the dog.
There
we
go.
You can engage in a training session with the dog, get them into some sits, some downs, some like basically taking their attention away from it.
There, the attention. That's where I was going.
Yeah.
Right. So with distance, when we're increasing the distance, we're drawing their attention away, yeah, from whatever it is that is going on. Right. Yeah. And so that's the thing we need to practice in the home is we need to practice engagement.
Yep.
Engagement's the number one thing I encourage all owners to do with their dogs. Mm-hmm. Right off the bat, you need engagement from your puppy because when they're engaged to you, they can't be reacting to something else.
Yeah.
And so instead of being like, oh, you're okay, you're just redirecting their attention, you're engaging them, and then you're leading them away. Yep. And by doing that, you're not violating the rules of falling into like the mailman theory, where, mm-hmm, we are seeing something scary and running away from it.
Yeah.
Instead, right? We're stopping, I'm getting the dog's attention, I'm getting the dog to dial into me, engage to me, then I'm increasing the distance.
Mm-hmm.
That's my strategy.
Yeah.
All right. And let's knock out number three. So mm-hmm. small challenges build big wins. So our confidence in puppies grows when they succeed at manageable tasks.
Yep.
And so we've got to give them tasks that they can succeed at, mm-hmm. but that aren't just, you know, dirt easy. We don't want it to be cool. Once the dog knows to sit, great. That sit no longer builds their confidence.
Yeah.
We got to change it.
Yep.
Like, I want them to jump up on something and sit up mm-hmm. here. I want them mm-hmm. to sit on something that they got to balance on. I want them to, you know, spin around my legs and then sit. I'm immediately changing the game up.
Yep.
So, obedience is a great tool. Maybe I could have like restructured this whole lesson on how obedience increases a dog's confidence, right? Because it really does. And that's how we use obedience to build that confidence. We need a foundation of obedience because we need to be able to give a dog, hey, I want you to do this, not that.
Yeah.
Instead of just, no, don't do this. I want to be like, no, don't do that. Do this. And if I don't have any obedience, what do I have to tell them to do instead?
Right.
Nothing. So that's why obedience is the cornerstone or the foundation of this building confidence. But that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about the actual act of how we affect this.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to use confidence building drills like climbing, low platforms, and walking on new textures. That's a big one.
Yeah.
I love the treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
I love the treadmill. It's got a different texture on the belt that goes, right? It's something different that the dog hasn't felt before.
Yeah.
We elevate it up so that it's kind of like running up a hill a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's like it beeps and it goes and they're running, but they're not going anywhere. It's a totally different concept for a dog.
Yeah.
And it's a great opportunity to build that dog's confidence.
Yep.
I love teaching climb and off as the obedience commands.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting them to jump on things, because I have yet to meet a dog that didn't like to jump on stuff when they could.
Yeah, when they could.
Right? And so you got to start slow. But even our most fearful jumpers that did not know where their back legs were
mm-hmm.
and did not know that they had legs.
Yeah.
By the time they left our programs, they were jumping up in the back of cars and stuff because that in and of itself can build a ton of confidence.
Yeah.
Because like, that's literally, here's an obstacle, overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
That is like the epitome of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Obstacle. I jumped over it. So.
Right. And we'll challenge kids like daily, right, to do hard things. But we are afraid to challenge our dogs to do something that we feel like is too hard for them.
Yeah. So food puzzles. Right. That's an engagement activity. Typically we classify it as engagement activity, but mm-hmm. it still stimulates the mind and makes them have to overcome an obstacle. I can't figure out how to get this food out of this thing.
Yeah.
But, oh, hey, I did figure it out. Now I got the food. Oh, this is great. Mm-hmm. Confidence. I'm trying to think of other really easy low hanging, things. Incorporating those obedience commands with sound.
Yeah.
Right. So you teach the dog those basic obedience things, sit, down, stay, come. And then you start working them with dogs barking mm-hmm. in the background, babies crying, glass breaking, car honking.
Yeah. Doorbells.
Doorbells. Right. Okay. Like all of these things are kind of like pretty standard sounds that usually set dogs off
mm-hmm.
and you just start working through them.
Yeah.
Like it's normal.
Yep.
All right. Then we reward the effort, but not, we don't require perfection.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But we reward the effort. We encourage, and then we keep pushing the dog while they show resilience. Mm-hmm. So that means if the dog's getting real close, but they're just overwhelmed, okay, cool. I'm going to help you.
Yep.
That's where you take over as the leader and you're like, cool, come with me. Let's do this together. But that is different than a dog like, nope, I will not participate.
Yeah.
Two different things. So when you can cipher through there or kind of sift through there, that's how I would deal with it. When you have a dog that's like trying hard, almost cool, I give you a little leniency. The dogs are like, nope, I will not participate. All right, cool. Then there's no treat. There's no reward. I'm not going to continue that, but I'm going to then dial down the distraction.
Right.
Just slightly.
Yeah, just make it easier.
Make it just a little easier, and I'm going to re-engage the dog. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. So then we gradually increase the challenge as the puppy improves. This goes for every dog. This is the entire dog's life, for sure. Every dog, like, there was... Right. There's a couple of food puzzles that we've used for like my Dutch Shepherd, and he will cruise through some of those now and just like he made it, right? like he created that puzzle. He knows it. So that puzzle no longer has the same value of me setting it in front of him.
Yep.
Right. I've got to up the challenge. So I've got to change something. And that can be all sorts of different things, right? We can, I like doing crazy stuff. And so where, cool, I'll take that same puzzle. Now let's do it out on the porch. Let's do that puzzle out in the cul-de-sac. Let's do that puzzle out at a brewery. Mm-hmm. Let's do like where the dog has to pay attention to all of these other things, right? I don't think that that's too much. I think that that is in line with what most dogs need to do, which is just see a different picture of the same thing. Mm-hmm. It might look like the same thing to us, but it's a different picture in the dog's mind. All right. So what's your favorite drill to build puppy confidence? Mine's jumping.
Yeah, jumping is a really, really good one. I like jumping up at the back of cars, things like that. I like doing different things on, like, different surfaces. That's a really good one, like walking across things and over things and under things. That's a really good one for me. Also, like, a classic sitting outside of somewhere, but, like, not going in. Because that's, like, the strongest dogs that you see, I think, are the dogs where it's, like, they have older owners who... just take them to the same place every day and they just sit outside like it's a park and like there's nobody there almost, but they just sit on the bench and like watch people walk by and then they go home. And it's because that dog gets exposure to so many different things that it gets to see and smell and hear, but it's not interacting with them necessarily. It's just watching them all go by. So yeah, those are some of my favorites.
And how... do you keep the challenges fair without overwhelming the puppy?
I think increasing in small increments and rewarding for any kind of progress, because puppies aren't the same as dogs that have like behavioral issues, right? It's like sometimes behavioral issues, you have to treat the dog accordingly depending on, you know, what their behavior is. But with puppies, it's like they're new and they're learning the world. Reward that dog for everything good that it's doing. It doesn't understand what it's doing when you first try it. So reward any kind of effort or progress, and it's just going to keep trying.
Yeah, definitely. I had written down that to share like a case where like structured challenges transformed a timid dog. Mm-hmm. And I think we've shared this like three or four times, but one, like I always go back to Gabe. Because he's the hardest dog I've ever trained. Because this dog is just like a circus animal.
Yeah.
But he's the dog that would, you know, just do something wazoo to a weird sound, right? Or just shake uncontrollably because there was a trash can within 12 feet of him. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the structure that we built into him was just, we're going to do this same thing every day.
Yeah.
Until suddenly he was like, oh, that actually doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. He's like, what? Just on Thursday. Like, yeah. He's like, oh, I actually don't care about that.
Yeah.
Like, you will never do this before, but now it's just good. And that really came from consistency of just doing the same exact things over and over.
Right. And it's not like he's on like an exact schedule, right? But he definitely thrives on his pattern of go in my kennel, go outside, run around, go on my place, go back in my kennel, go outside, run around.
Yeah.
Go back on my place.
And
like, he loves that pattern.
Right.
And he knows it. He knows it and he loves it.
He
goes to the place or he goes to
because
the door.
Because he's safe in all of those areas, right?
Right.
This is a dog who had a very, very, very rough past, a very bad life before he was rescued. And he's about 6 years old now.
Yeah.
And he just loves his sequence. He loves his pattern.
That's all he cares about. And I know some people would be like, well, I want my dog to have more like freedom, but like, what does he need to do?
Right. He doesn't want to do anything
else.
Right.
Those
you take him outside, he just starts shaking.
Yeah.
Right.
But he loves to run in the yard and he does that.
Loves it.
He runs around.
It's his favorite thing.
He'll stay out there forever by himself. And then he's like, there's something scary. I've decided. Can you let me back in?
Right.
And he comes back in and he's like, I would like to go in my kennel. And it's like, cool. Okay. Go back in your kennel. And then he comes out and he goes on his place and then he goes back outside. And it's this whole pattern. But my man loves it. He's like, yeah.
And this was before a dog that would just pee out of sheer fear of anyone coming in or anything going on.
Yeah.
But by giving him those outlets, right? It's you guys, everybody has to understand that it's on the dog's pace, right? Like, you can't force a dog to like something.
Right. They decide what they like. And he doesn't like to play. And we are huge on like, you should play with your dog. But like, he just likes to scamper around.
Right. He loves
run fast.
And so he loves to run. He loves to run fast. And so what we do is I'll play with one of the other dogs.
Right.
Because I offer him these balls. It's not that I'm not doing this. Right. I offer him all of these things. The exact same way that we train every other dog.
Yeah.
He just doesn't want to engage those. He wants to be part of the pack.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to make decisions. Do I have to go get that? Do I have to bring it back? He doesn't want to do any of that. He just wants to be part of the pack. So he plays with as a supporting role to the main character, which is Nala or Dexter.
Yeah.
And they will run until they die. And they will run and catch balls and frisbees and all of these things. And you know what Gabe does? He just runs with them.
Yep.
Doesn't want to get them.
Nope.
Doesn't want to bring it back. Doesn't want anything. Just wants to run.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and he's just the happiest, happiest dog. And that's fine.
Because he's never picked up a ball in his life except for once. And it was like a month ago. And I was like, who are you? But he never touched another one.
Yeah.
He just picked it up for a second. And then he realized he didn't know what to do with it.
Right.
So he's like, I'm going to put it back
down. I don't actually want this.
Yeah, I don't actually want that. I just saw it, thought I wanted it, thought it was food.
But he's the sweetest boy. He's the sweetest dog. He loves the pets, loves the affection.
Yeah.
And you know what? That is the dog that he loves being.
Yeah, that's the dog he is.
And so we pushed him on some of these limits.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found where it's like, he's like, no, I don't really like that.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the upside of me pushing him through that?
Right.
Cool. Yeah. So then he grabs the ball, right? Like it just doesn't matter.
Right. I've even tried to get him to like tug on something for a piece of salmon. And he's like, no, just give me the salmon.
Right. But he'll run on a treadmill.
He will run on a treadmill because he loves to run. That's what he
loves to run. So anyway, all of this is to say that I recently started saying this and it brings more meaning to me every time.
Yeah.
And it's like, you have the dog you have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You don't have the dog that other people have.
Yeah.
So.
Or the dogs on TV or wherever it is that right. We have these dogs that just like follow you around and they're not on a leash and they never look at another dog or a person right. or any of that.
And there are trainers out there that will tell you that, well, you can train every dog to be anything.
Yeah.
I don't know that I fully believe that anymore.
Yeah.
Because the dog chooses what the dog's going to be.
Right. It's like people. It's like every human chooses their own career.
Want to do, yeah. right? To a certain degree. And I don't like that sentence that I just said.
Right.
Right. The dog chooses it. Right. The dog chooses what to do. Because I always advocate for you to be the leader and you to choose what the dog does. But where I draw the line with that is at no point am I ever talking, when I'm talking about leadership, I'm not talking about choosing what the dog should do, whether they like it or not.
Right.
That's not what we're talking about. We're just talking about if they're going to eat salmon that day or they're going to eat beef, right? Like, yeah. Okay, cool. Make the decision and give them what you've decided.
Right. I think we're also talking about like personality quirks.
Yes. Right. When we get into personality and how the dog is really going to be, you can't control that.
Right.
The dog controls that.
Yeah.
And there are dog averse dogs.
Mm-hmm.
There are dog selective dogs. And then there are dogs that love every dog.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't necessarily have that dog that loves every dog.
Yeah.
Most dogs are dog selective. Mm-hmm. A few dogs love every dog. Most dogs are dog selective. And some dogs are dog aggressive or just I just don't love the dogs.
Yeah.
You have the dog you have. Mm-hmm. You don't have the same dog that Joe down the street has.
Yep.
And so it's really important to remember that it's a living, breathing being.
Yeah.
All right. So at this point, I am going to open it up for questions here. I'm going to play my Jeopardy music until we get sued.
Well, now we're going to because you said it.
No, no. It's technically an off-brand version of the Jeopardy theme anyway.
Well, that doesn't even make any sense because it sounds just like it.
Right, but it's not like the Jeopardy theme, so that's how I'm getting around it. Mm-hmm. If anybody who is dialed in live has any questions, now is the time to unmute and ask. I'll give you about 10 or 15 seconds here. All right. I'm getting no questions. It makes my life easy. All right. We're going to dive into our listener projects. Listener project number one, new surface drill. So I want you to introduce your puppy or your dog to three new surfaces this week, right? We can do gravel, wood, tile. Don't get crazy with it with, you know, this slippery, like, you know, you put a sheet of glass down and do whatever. Let's just do gravel, wood, tile, maybe a treadmill belt, some slats of some sort, something that the dog is not used to. And we're going to encourage exploration. We're going to mark with yes. We're going to give them a treat. We're going to give them when anything calm happens. So as the dog relaxes and chills out, we reward it. Yes. Give them a treat. We're going to reward those small steps towards curiosity and build that comfort with those interactions. All right. Listener project number two, leadership walk. So take a short walk in a quiet area. Guide your puppy or your dog confidently past mild distractions like, you know, parked cars, people at a distance. Try to avoid dogs specifically for this because we're looking for these calm type mild distractions. Kids playing soccer or baseball or something where they're all interacting, but they're not interacting with the dog.
Yep.
And from a distance. Mm-hmm. Those are great. Down in Surf City, there's a skate park. That's a great one.
Yeah.
You go to the park and you can literally walk around this playground. You can walk well around this playground.
Yeah.
And that all the kids are playing on, and you can walk past the skate park. There's a sidewalk pretty, like a pretty good distance away from the skate park. So you can just kind of walk back and forth. Mm-hmm. And all this, the skate park people are just doing their thing and yeah. they're not paying attention to the dog. But there's noises, there's distractions.
Yeah.
All right. That's what we're talking about. Guide. I already talked about that. Mark calm behavior. Reward after passing the distractions and reward engagement. Always reward engagement with your dog. So when they look at you, give them that engagement. All right. That is all I got there. One thing I wanted to say is, I had my notes. Thank you. We were voted first place in the Top Sale Top Choice Awards on the that just closed this last month. So we got first place for the for a dog obedience program. So that's the Baseline Dog Trainer Award, and honestly, I was super blown away because. I mean, it's super cool. We both have been putting in about 70-hour weeks for the last 3 or 4 weeks. As things have just kind of like come to a head before the holidays, and we've got lessons, and we've got dogs, and we got our dogs, and we got kids, and we got all of the normal life things, plus other, job growth opportunities and things. So we are super, super blessed. I wanted to put out a personal thank you to everyone who voted for us. That really meant a lot. And it was really, really cool to see. Super yeah. shocking, but super, I was stoked. I was super stoked. So thank you from personally from me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys. It's been a great journey so far, and it was actually unbelievable to win first place. So yeah. Thanks everybody.
So with that, we are gonna close it down here. I appreciate everybody for tuning in. Thank you to our clients who are live on the line. Even if you didn't have any questions, that's totally fine. If you are listening to this afterwards, I would love it to hear from you. Send me an email, send me a text, go on and leave me a comment on one of the different podcast hosting services, however you listen to this later. And if you want, leave us a review and let us know how we're doing. With that, I will be signing off. Thank you guys. Have a good night.
Thanks. Good night.
Thank you.